Good afternoon. We are here for oral argument. This is Joseph Clifton Smith versus the Commissioner of the Alabama Department of Corrections. Casey Keaton is here for the appellee Smith. Thomas Wilson is here for the appellant, the commissioner. And I would advise counsel that Judge Jordan is participating remotely this afternoon. He's participating as a member of the panel remotely. And I see that counsel are here and ready to proceed. And Mr. Wilson, you may begin your argument.
May it please the court, Thomas Wilson on behalf of the state. Five valid IQ scores clustered in the mid-70s offered the district court two potential conclusions regarding Smith's intellectual functioning. The first was to agree with the state that these scores dramatically narrowed the margin of error and confirmed that Smith's true IQ falls comfortably above the 70 IQ threshold, but the court rejected that argument. The second path was to accept Smith's theory that the Flynn effect functionally lowered his scores, and that because of the Flynn effect, his true IQ fell at 70 or below. But the district court rejected that too. Instead of adopting either theory, the district court struck out on its own, and it chose a third option that the record cannot support. After rejecting the Flynn effect, the district court cherry-picked the lowest, least reliable score Smith has ever scored in his life, and then used the standard error of measurement as applied to that particular score as a one-way ratchet and took the lowest end of that test's SEM. This approach plainly violates medical and scientific consensus, and it's easy to see why. Imagine a mirror image case where a prisoner has five IQ scores clustered in the mid-60s, but then the court takes the highest score, and let's call it a 68, and uses the SEM as a one-way ratchet upward to get a score above 70 and disqualifies an Atkins claimant on that basis alone.
Familiar with the cases of Hall and Moore?
I am, Your Honor.
I ask is because I didn't see them cited in your initial brief, and only the dissent is cited in your reply brief, and it seems to me like they are the controlling precedent here. Do you disagree?
I think that they're very important for this case, Your Honor. I would also suggest that the cases that we did cite, like Ledford and Jenkins, are this court's interpretations of Hall and Moore. So I think that those cases are going to be more controlling and more refined for the particular issues in this case.
Well, but let me ask you this then, because it seems to me, and maybe I've missed something, so, you know, feel free to explain. It seems to me that in Hall and in Moore, the court says that if considering the standard error margin, you have a score under 70 and there is any doubt about whether the person might be intellectually disabled, that then the judge needs to go on and consider adaptive functioning and also the third prong, right? So it needs to consider all of these things together, which is, as you know, what we instructed the court to do the first time, or the last time, I guess I should say, that this came up. And the reason for that, the Supreme Court has said, is because the IQ test is not a precise measurement in and of itself. And it, by itself, can't tell you whether a person is intellectually disabled. And so you have to look at all of these things together. So let me first ask you, do you agree with that?
So, Your Honor, I think that I do agree with that particular interpretation that I think that you just sat out in Hall. And if I may comment on why I think it's not going to control or disqualify our argument here. So in Hall, the issue had to do with the confidence interval that Florida courts were applying to Atkins claimants. So I'll remind you, Your Honor, on page 724 of Hall, the beginning of subsection 3E, the court deliberately limits its holding to a single IQ score. It says, Florida seeks to execute a man because he scored a 71 instead of a 70 on an IQ test. Now, the standard error of measure as it applies to a single IQ test is substantially different than the margin of error that applies when you have multiple IQ tests. And that's what the expert testimony in this case confirms. Dr. Reschle and Dr. Fabian, the Smith's experts, both agreed that you have something called construct of validity when you have multiple IQ scores. And in this case, we have multiple IQ scores clustered in the mid-70s, and those are going to dramatically decrease the margin of error that applies. So while Hall applied to one particular IQ score, and that was particularly important in Hall, I'll note, because Freddie Lee Hall had several IQ tests. Each IQ test, the clinicians said that he was intellectually disabled. So it was particularly suspect for Florida courts to come forward and say, well, no, he got a 71 rather than a 70. Everything else is over. So what Hall stands for is the proposition that in a condition of uncertainty as to the intellectual functioning prong, you need to look at adaptive measurements.
So
that's
Hall,
not the case
Hall
here.
And, Hall and Moore don't apply when you have multiple IQ scores?
Well, Your Honor, what Hall said about multiple IQ scores is simply said, evaluating multiple IQs is a complicated endeavor. That's on page 714. It cited a couple of medical journals, and then it moved on from that point. And again, deliberately constrained its holding to a situation in which the claimant had a very low IQ score of 71, just above that 70 IQ threshold.
And more only apply when you have one IQ score for the court to take into consideration?
I don't think that's not what I'm trying to say, Your Honor. What I'm trying to suggest is that Hall and Moore apply when there are conditions of substantial uncertainty as to whether the claimant is able to show that his intellectual functioning falls at 70 or below.
Well, that's what the district judge decided here, that it was too close a call, that there was uncertainty, and so therefore I'm going to move on to adaptive deficits. And isn't that exactly what the Alabama court did in Carroll versus State? When there was some uncertainty, it moved on to determine whether or not the petitioner has met his burden of establishing that he has significant deficits in adaptive behavior to assist the court in determining whether or not he has significantly sub-average intellectual functioning. That's exactly what the Alabama courts have done as well.
What I want to suggest to Your Honor is that the district court clearly erred in saying that there was substantial uncertainty as to that intellectual functioning prong and hitting an IQ of 70 or below. And I think that Smith knew this because he had five IQ scores that were clustered in the mid-70s, which is why he put all of his eggs in the Flynn effect basket and why his own expert, Dr. Fabian, was willing to concede that without the Flynn effect, Smith's IQ scores fall outside the range, not just above 70, outside the range of intellectual disability.
So let me ask you sort of two related questions. You're aware that the 74 and the 75 IQ scores were before us the last time this case was here, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And at that time, and the standard error of margin, standard error margin, I guess, there was testimony at this evidentiary hearing is 3 to 4 points, right?
For a particular score, it was 3 points. The actual standard error of measurement for the Stanford-Binet 5, which Dr. Fabian administered to Mr. Smith, is 2.3. But in the record, you're right, it says about 3 points for that particular test, which is different than a margin of error for all these tests.
Okay. But be that as it may, that means that even if you want to use four as the standard error margin for a test on 75, that would mean that when this case was before us the last time and there was a test score of 75, that under your theory, there would be no need to send this back because Mr. Smith couldn't possibly be intellectually disabled. But we did send it back, and we sent it back because we said the Supreme Court required us to send it back because there was some lack of clarity about whether or not he might be intellectually disabled. I mean, we said it based on Atkins, but we did say that the last time. I mean, did we not send it back with a score of 75?
Your Honor did send it back, and I think that the reason that...
I did not. I was not on the panel.
I apologize, Your Honor.
That's all right.
This court did send it back, and the reason that it sent it back was because the district court expressly blessed the Alabama State Court's decision to disclaim the standard error of measurement. And it cited Thomas v. Allen rather than Hall for that proposition, because, as Your Honor knows, Hall is not retroactively applicable. So it was looking at Thomas v. Allen and said, you know what, we can't accept a situation where the state courts are simply disclaiming the SEM. So it sent it back for an evidentiary hearing on that issue. And I think that when we look at the evidentiary, when we look at the evidence from that evidentiary hearing, what we see is that the standard error of measure, according to all the experts, is, quote, dramatically decreased in this case. And for a situation where all of the IQ scores are clustered in the mid-70s, that means that Mr. Smith cannot meet his burden. So I'd like to point out three...
Let me ask you something else, because as I mentioned, I wanted to ask you two questions related to this. The second question goes to Hall, and I'm looking at the sentence that you recited to us, and it says Florida seeks to execute a man because he scored a 71 instead of a 70 on an IQ test. And so it's true that in that case there was one test that was at issue, but it doesn't say on a single IQ test. And I'm not sure where you're getting from this that this does not apply, that Hall's holding and Moore's holding do not apply when at least one of the tests that's administered, if it's not found to be an outlier, and the court here did not find it to be one, that you don't have to go ahead and conduct the full-blown inquiry, and that there is a possibility that the person is intellectually disabled, and so there needs to be a factual finding on that based on evidence of all three areas.
Right. Let me try to be clear, Your Honor. I don't mean to suggest that Hall and Moore do not apply here. They're Supreme Court precedent. Of course they apply. The holdings of those cases, though, suggest that when there is substantial doubt as to whether the claimant has met the intellectual functioning prong, like in a situation where there is one score of 71, and a standard error of measure that could easily put that particular score at 70 or below, the courts should look to adaptive functioning. You know, Florida was simply bifurcating the process and cutting off all further evidence as to any sort of intellectual disability, and the court said you can't do that.
So again, Hall and Moore only apply when there's just one IQ score?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. The test would be substantial doubt as to the IQ, and in this case, we don't have that for the reasons that I would like to explain. So the district court had three clear errors. The first is that it cherry-picked the Smith's lowest, least reliable IQ score and failed to account for the multiple IQ tests, which again dramatically reduced the margin of error in this case. Second, the district court badly misunderstood, and this is the most important point, the district court badly misunderstood and misapplied the standard error of measurement. It treated it as a one-way ratchet, and it cherry-picked the lowest possible score within one SEM. Again, the mirror image case where
I don't know, but I don't interpret it. The court said it was too close to call, and so I'm going to reserve judgment on the first prong, and then I'm going to table it and then double back after I consider whether or not he's met his burden of establishing significant deficits in adaptive behavior. And then I'll make a determination as to whether or not he met his burden on the first prong. I'm not aware of any authority that would prevent the court from doing that. And in fact, your argument is that the court should have stopped on the first prong. If she had done that, she would have violated the law of the case.
Right. Well, I don't mean to suggest that the court needed to stop on the first prong, but as Your Honor knows, Atkins is a three-part conjunctive test in which each inquiry is necessary. So the error that the district court made was moving on and using adaptive analysis to influence the first inquiry when, as I'll explain, there was not substantial doubt.
It seems like at bottom what you're arguing is that if, after considering the standard error of margin, any test score gives you higher than a 70, that the person cannot possibly be found to be intellectually disabled. I mean, that's what you're arguing, is it not?
Your Honor, and I would point you to Jenkins versus.
Are you arguing that, though? Can you answer that for me, please?
If you have applied the standard error of measure and the score is above 70, then the claimant has failed to meet the intellectual functioning prong. That is what Jenkins expressly held when it applied. It granted the petitioner his argument to use the SEM as a one-way ratchet. Ratchet it down. The score was a 71. And the court in Jenkins said 71 is above 70 under Alabama's law. We have applied the margin of error. The claim ends there.
Well, so, counsel, I was on the prior panel that remanded the case back. And what we concluded in that opinion was that other pieces of evidence should be considered together with the IQ scores to determine whether or not Smith is intellectually disabled. So if the court didn't do that, it would have violated the law of the case if it didn't consider other pieces of evidence, including deficits in adaptive behavior. It would have violated the law of the case.
Well, Your Honor, it's more than welcome to consider those. But again, Atkins is a three-part conjunctive test, so he still has
to
satisfy.
But that's the whole point, right? Atkins is a three-part conjunctive test. And Hall and Moore emphasize that it's three parts because you can't determine whether somebody is intellectually disabled based solely on a score that is above 70. I mean, that's, you know, if it's in that margin of the, you know, between 70 and, I guess, 80 or something. But it's basically you can't necessarily determine based solely on that that a person is or is not intellectually disabled. And that's why you have to consider it wholly, and you have to consider the other two aspects of the test, and you have to hear evidence from the medical professionals. And in this case, the court heard evidence from the medical professionals, from four different medical professionals, and found one of them not to be credible. I mean, you understand we're on a clearly erroneous standard of review here, right?
Of course, Your Honor.
Okay, so that means under our case law that we cannot, even if we disagreed with the district court's findings, we're not at liberty to be able to change them or reject them unless they're contrary to the laws of nature or of that type of error.
Right, and I would like to suggest, if I may, that the district court's conclusion about the first intellectual functioning prong was contrary to the laws of science. It did exactly what Hall and Moore say you can't do. It disregarded medical consensus because it plucked the lowest score that Smith has ever achieved in his life, which, by the way, was also the only score under which Smith was suffering major depression. Dr. Chuddy testified to this. He was
so
a high suicide
risk. Which scores should the court have taken into consideration and then applying the standard of measurement? The highest score?
It should have taken all of the scores. Your Honor,
that's what she did.
I don't think that is actually what the court did.
Said was it's too close to call, and
correct.
I'm going to reserve judgment and then double back. Isn't that exactly what Judge Grenade did in this case?
That is what Judge Grenade said, and what I'm trying to suggest is that itself was clearly erroneous. I don't think that Hall and Moore stand for the proposition that a district court simply gets to say, well, this is too close to call, therefore I'm going to move on and start blending the separate Atkins inquiries. It has to have a substantial basis in the record to do that.
Are you aware of any authority that would prevent a court from inverting the analysis? In other words, I'm going to look at the second adaptive deficits in behavior. I'm going to look at that first. You aware of any authority that would prevent a court from doing that?
The order of operations is irrelevant, Your Honor. A court could take a look at that first if it wanted to, but in a case like this one, when you have five IQ scores clustered in the mid-70s and a dramatically decreased margin of error, according to all of the experts in the case, we know that the intellectual functioning prong is not going to be met. And I see that time is winding down.
But part of the problem, though, is that the Supreme Court has also said that even if the number is a 70 or a 69 or a 71 or a 72, that the test itself is imprecise, and you can't look at a test all by itself and say, unless of course it's like 130 or something, you can't look at a test all by itself that's in that general borderline area and say this person definitively is or is not intellectually disabled. That's what the Supreme Court has said, right?
Correct, Your Honor, and I was home in on your language. You can't look at a test. You can't look at a test because it is going to have that particularly broad margin of error that could drop to 70 or below. That is not the case here. And because I'm running low on time, I'd like to note what I would consider the worst, most clear error in this case, which is coming in the district court's use of the standard error of measurement. In Ledford, this court made several important points about the standard error of measure that I would like to reiterate. The first, and I'm quoting, the standard error of measurement is a bidirectional concept. It does not carry with it a presumption that an individual's IQ falls at the bottom of his IQ range. Second, while Hall requires lower courts at least to consider the standard error of measurement, it does not require them to find significant subaverage functioning simply because an IQ is 75 or below. And third, I think this is particularly appropriate and important for your point, Judge Wilson, about this, the standard of review in this case. Ledford set out the standard of review, which is clear error, when we're applying the SEM. And that test is whether, quote, the district court's findings regarding how the standard error of measurement informs its ultimate intellectual functioning determination are plausible in light of the record viewed in its entirety. But the district court explicitly applied the SEM downward, and it never explained why. And I think the clearest example of this, Your Honors, comes at page 28 of the district court's opinion. It said, and I quote, Smith scored a full-scale IQ of 74 or 75, which would be adjusted to 72. Why? Why would it be adjusted to a 72? There is no scientific basis, as this court has explained in published opinions, for taking the lowest possible range of a score's SEM when every other IQ test is above that score. And again, the court failed to recognize that both sides' experts agreed that in a situation with five valid IQ scores clustered together, the SEM is going to be, quote, decreased dramatically. The district court ignored all of this evidence.
Let me ask you something. Weren't there three experts who concluded that he was intellectually disabled?
Your Honor, three experts who concluded that? I don't think so. I think Dr. Fabian was the only one who was actually allowed to make a conclusion about his adult functioning, and he concluded that Smith was intellectually disabled, in contrast to the other four clinicians throughout Smith's life, each of whom concluded he was not intellectually disabled. What's particularly ironic about that is that... No, Your Honor. Dr. Chudy did not conclude he was intellectually disabled. On the test in 1998, which was the 72, in which he was, quote, a high suicide risk.
But, in any event, Dr. Fabian and Dr. Reschle did determine that he was intellectually disabled.
But, Your Honor, I would note that Dr. Reschle was not allowed to give an opinion about his adult functioning. And if I may, I'll talk about Dr. Reschle's analysis. What he concluded was... again, that the Flynn effect was what was going to bring his scores below 70. And even if
I thought the court weighed Reschle and Fabian against King and then determined that Fabian and Reschle were more credible than King with regard to whether or not Smith is intellectually disabled. That did not happen.
Your Honor, I think that did happen, and so I'm not arguing necessarily that King is more credible. What I'm trying to suggest is that even granting Dr. Reschle and Dr. Fabian's testimony, it is incoherent to conclude without the Flynn effect, which, again, the district court expressly rejected, that Mr. Smith's IQ fell at 70 or below. And I'll note that Dr. Reschle repeatedly advocated for the Flynn effect. He applied it to every single one of Smith's IQ scores. The problem was that they were still, except for one, falling at 70 or below, but instead of acknowledging that, Reschle simply concluded that Smith met intellectual functioning because he fell, quote, in the critical range of IQ 65 to 75. Now, that applies to a one score, that is a one SEM, or a one test SEM. And again, the conclusion that being below 75 is enough to meet Atkins's first requirement is inconsistent with what this court said in the published case of Ledford. And I'll note because I'm about to run out of time, I'd like to talk about Dr. Fabian. He repeatedly applied both the lowest range of the SEM and the Flynn effect to Smith's scores. That's all throughout the record. And he had to concede that without the Flynn effect, Smith's IQ fell, in his words, outside the range of intellectual disability. And because I suspect that my friend is going to try to minimize the gravity of Fabian's concession the same way that she did on his redirect, I'd like to take just a second to talk about her approach to rehabilitating that concession. On redirect, my friend asked Dr. Fabian whether, without the Flynn effect, Smith's scores besides the 78 were, quote, in the range for intellectual disability as defined by the DSM and the AAIDD. Let me pause on this. First of all, throwing out a valid 78 with no basis at all is even worse than what the Texas courts were doing under Briseño and Moore. But more importantly, my friend was asking the wrong question. The range in the DSM and AAIDD manuals applies to a single individual score. I see that my time is up. If I may just finish this thought.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Fabian confirmed this question by answering yes, where they discussed 70 to 75 as being a threshold requirement. The 75 IQ threshold refers to the margin of error for a single score. That is what the AAIDD and DSM manuals are talking about. Again, that is not this case, where unrebutted testimony from both parties' experts confirms that the SEM is dramatically decreased because of Smith's multiple valid IQ scores. And Fabian further testified on redirect that Smith's scores in the mid-70s, were, quote, very consistent, more so than many cases I've reviewed. Well, the expert consensus in this case shows that that kind of consistency creates construct validity that dramatically decreases the SEM and thus dramatically decreases the potential range of Smith's true IQ and confirms its placement above 70. Dr. Fabian's testimony on redirect was concession, not rehabilitation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Keaton, you may proceed.
May it please the court. Casey Keaton for Joseph Smith, Your Honors. In Atkins, the court specifically set out that it is estimated that between 1 and 3% of the population has an IQ between 70 and 75 or lower, which is typically considered the cutoff IQ score for the intellectual function prong of the mental retardation definition. In Hall, Freddie Lee Hall presented with seven IQ scores between 71 and 80. Those were the IQ scores that came up on appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. There were actually nine. Two scores were below 71, but those were thrown out for evidentiary reasons in the lower court. The court agreed with medical experts that when a defendant's IQ test score falls within the test's acknowledged and inherent margin of error, the defendant must be able to present additional evidence of intellectual disability, including testimony regarding adaptive deficits. That is what the district court allowed here. It did not ignore IQ scores. In fact, as Your Honor noted, the court found it a close case because Mr. Smith had scores between 72 and 78, quite similar to Petitioner Hall, between 71 and 80. And because of that close case, she did what the court had instructed, which is to go on and consider evidence of adaptive deficits. And at great length, in the 30-page opinion, she considered those adaptive deficits. And as the court considered and noted in Hall and again in Moore, relevant clinical authorities agree that an individual with an IQ score above 70 may properly be diagnosed with intellectual disability if significant limitations in adaptive functioning also exist, and that a person with an IQ score above 70 may have severe adaptive problems such that the person's actual functioning is comparable to that of individuals with a lower IQ score. The district court noted that and specifically found that in regard to Mr. Smith. In properly considering Mr. Smith's Atkins claim, the district court considered current clinical standards cited by the Supreme Court and applied them to the facts of Mr. Smith's case. She reviewed over 1,700 pages of exhibits and heard 2 days of testimony from experts. She heard Dr. Reschle testify, who did conclude, based on Mr. Smith's school records, that pre-18, he qualified as someone who was intellectually disabled. Because he did not do any testing, he did not testify as to any adult behaviors, but did testify as to his pre-18 testing and his school records.
Seem odd that Dr. Reschle would arrive at an opinion without examining Smith at all? I mean, doesn't that diminish the strength of the district court's finding and reliance on Reschle?
I do not believe so, Your Honor, because that is exactly what any expert relying solely on school records would do as to pre-18 qualifications. Dr. King did the same thing in regard to pre-18 qualifications. There is nothing else that he relied on as to pre-18 information.
Is there a way to examine a person who's Mr. Smith's age for whether, I mean, just based on an examination of Mr. Smith at someone at that age, for whether they were developmentally challenged, I guess, or whether their intellectual disability manifested during school age?
You know, Dr. Reschle and Dr. Fabian both spoke to that there's not a perfect instrument to...
I guess my question is, but by asking him questions, is there, in other words, does it matter whether or not you examine? Maybe it does. I don't know. I'm asking you. Does it matter? Are you able to determine anything from actually examining a person who is Mr. Smith's age? Are you able to determine by having a discussion with him and examining him whether or not when he was, you know, many years earlier in school, whether or not he had intellectual disability or challenges that were consistent with being intellectually disabled?
I think the only thing that you really speaks to now current is current functioning. I don't believe speaking to some
evaluating. Is there anything in the record about that one way or the other?
Dr. Fabian speaks to that there are no perfect instruments, and that speaking and evaluating now as he did with the independent living scales speaks to only to Mr. Smith's current functioning and not to past functioning. And he could speak to, you know, self-report as to how Mr. Smith felt about school. And he did do individual evaluations with Mr. Smith's mother and other individuals who knew Mr. Smith earlier in life. But as far as evaluating Mr. Smith and talking about how he did in school, there is not a perfect instrument to speak to that. No, Your Honor.
What about the 78 that he received on one of the IQ tests? What are we to do with that? Does that preclude a finding? It seems like that's what the state is saying. That precludes a finding of intellectual disability. And I'm wondering if you agree with that, and if not, what is your basis?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. Intellectual disability is not a number. The courts have spoken to that through Atkins, Hall, Moore, Brumfield, repeatedly. Intellectual functioning does not occur in a vacuum. These tests over time depend on from day to day. They're not perfect instruments. They are what may happen at any given time. They are.
Let me ask you something. The state also says that the district court didn't account for the notion that, you know, the standard error margin is not something we just consider on the downside. We also consider it on the upside. And so if we consider it on the upside, if we take that 78, I guess his score could have been as high as an 81. Does that change in any way your view of this? And why not if it doesn't?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. I think you would look at first, I would disagree entirely that the district court only considered a standard error of measure downward. In fact, the quotation in regard to the standard error of measure being a 69 was actually the district court referencing testimony at the trial from Dr. Chuddy, where she is referencing that there was testimony at trial that his IQ could have been as low as 69. That is her quotation of Dr. Chuddy's testimony at trial. That is not her applying the standard error of measure, would be my response to that. So I don't believe that she's applying that standard
error
of measure.
But even assuming that assume for purposes of this question that she did. We'll just assume it for purposes of the hypothetical. Would that be a reversible error of any type? And if not, why not?
Again, I think if there was an inference that was the only thing that she did was to only apply a single score, I think that would be that is not a reversible error because she did reference that he had five scores and that they were all above 70, and she repeatedly referenced those scores throughout the opinion. But again, I think that she never indicated that there was some kind of finding that he had scores significantly lower than that. And again, it is why she considered it a close case and moved instead on to the consideration of adaptive functioning deficits.
Thank you.
And again, in fact, she noted that Dr. King's full scale score of 74 and noted in Mr. Smith's multiple IQ scores, in fact, all of Mr. Smith's IQ scores, if you do not consider the standard error taken over a long period of time, place him in the borderline range, functioning just above intellectual disability. That Dr. King testified there are five IQ scores under different conditions and that they are all in the borderline range of intellectual functioning. And noted that while this leans in favor of finding that Mr. Smith does not have significant subaverage intellectual functioning, the court does not find it strong enough to conclude that Mr. Smith is not intellectually disabled without considering evidence of his adaptive deficits.
Does that shift the burden of proof to the state of Alabama if Smith was unable initially to establish that he had significantly sub-average intellectual functioning? The court can't make that determination. You haven't met your burden, Mr. Smith. You haven't met your burden of establishing that. So therefore, I'm going to move on. Doesn't that shift the burden of proof?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. I think it does exactly what the Supreme Court instructed in Hall, which is if you have met, because you have demonstrated that you have these IQ scores in this 65 to 75 range, which is in this clinically established threshold range, that the next thing that the court is to do is to go and consider this evidence of adaptive functioning deficits. And then we look and see, do these adaptive functioning deficits impact the consideration of the intellectual functioning? And in this instance, that is exactly what the court found, is that because of his significant adaptive functioning deficits, in the scale measuring, that it is what she found here, that it did temper and demonstrate that he was functioning significantly lower than someone with those IQ scores. And it would shift to the Flynn effect. The testimony, the court specifically found that she did not consider the Flynn effect. And Dr. Fabian testified that he believed that the Flynn effect was not required in regard to the scores for him to consider Mr. Smith to qualify as intellectually disabled. They did believe that the Flynn effect applied in regard to those scores, but that it was not necessary in order for those scores to fall into the range. And the raw scores themselves are all within the clinical threshold range of the 65 to 75, with the exception of the 78. So those are not, the Flynn effect itself is not and has not been part of Mr. Smith's theory as the state posited in its opening argument. Mr. Smith is an intellectually disabled man who is entitled to relief pursuant to Atkins, and the district court's decision finding just that below should be upheld by this court. The state argued in its opening brief and continues that argument here today that the district court determined that Mr. Smith is intellectually disabled without reviewing a wealth of evidence to the contrary. However, what the state's argument has boiled down to is a narrative of simply wishing the district court had ruled differently. There is nothing the state has argued that demonstrates the district court committed clear error and failed to consider any evidence. In Hall, the Supreme Court reversed Florida's strict adherence to a cutoff IQ score at 70 and ruled that states must consider IQ scores as a range and not a fixed number. It seems that the state wishes that that were not so. I would note that in this case, previously, the state acknowledged in its briefing that even multiple IQ raw scores above 70 do not defeat an Atkins claim. And that was in the state's own prior briefing here. It should not be allowed to argue differently now. The court in Hall concluded, in accord with medical experts, that when a defendant's IQ test score falls within the test acknowledged and inherent margin of error, the defendant must be able to present additional evidence of intellectual disability. Here, again, in Moore, the court reversed Texas law, which utilized court-created factors in lieu of considering clinical definitions of adaptive functioning. By doing so, the court failed adequately to inform itself of the medical community's diagnostic framework. In properly considering Mr. Smith's Atkins claim, the district court considered the current clinical standards as cited by the Supreme Court and applied them to the facts of Mr. Smith's case. Mr. Smith, as Mr. Hall, had IQ scores within the clinically established range for an intellectual disability. Acknowledging that Mr. Smith had scores within that range, the district court moved to the discussion of adaptive functioning and then made a clear finding that Mr. Smith possessed significant intellectual deficits and significant adaptive functioning deficits. The district court next considered whether those existed prior to age 18. After a discussion of those facts, it made a finding that Mr. Smith possessed both significant deficits in intellectual functioning and adaptive functioning prior to age 18, and found that he was intellectually disabled and entitled to relief pursuant to Atkins. There's more than sufficient evidence in the record below to support the district court's finding, and there is nothing that rises to the level of clear error. If you have no further questions.
All right, I think we have your argument, Ms. Keaton. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And Mr. Wilson, you have reserved some time for rebuttal. Mr. Wilson, let me ask you this question, because
yes,
I was on the panel in the prior case that sent the case back down to the district court.
Yes, sir.
I thought we said in the opinion that the court has to look at other evidence other than the IQ scores in order to determine whether or not Mr. Smith is intellectually disabled. Am I wrong about that?
Your Honor, I think that the issue, or as I read the opinion in 2015, the issue was that the district court was expressly agreeing with the state courts that the SEM didn't have to be considered. And so in that kind of scenario where there's uncertainty as to the intellectual functioning prong, I think that it could have made sense to look at adaptive functioning. But after the evidentiary hearing, we've confirmed
do that, it would violate the law of the case.
Your Honor, I'm not saying that the court couldn't have looked to adaptive functioning. It is allowed to consider all that evidence, but the type of holding that it would have had to reach regarding intellectual functioning was not what it reached. It would have had to say, well, I think that maybe some of these scores on the higher end of Smith's IQ are invalid. It would have had to apply the Flynn effect. It didn't do any of that. So it was clear error for the district court to find that there was this sort of confusion. That is the issue, I think, at the heart of this case. And I'd like to go back to...
Before you do that, counsel, I'm sorry, but I think maybe I misunderstood your position on Hall. I just want to make sure I'm understanding it. I understood you to say that Hall doesn't apply here because Hall involved only a single IQ score of 71. Did I misunderstand you?
You did, Your Honor. Hall, of course, applies here.
Oh, okay, but was your point that it was limited to when there is only a single IQ score?
No, Your Honor. My point that I've been trying to elaborate, which I'm clearly not doing a good job. The point
it may
is
not
that,
be you, but why I'm trying to figure out, because I understood you to say that the reason that Hall isn't controlling here is because it, in fact, I thought you recited to me a sentence about there being a single IQ score, except that it turned out it didn't say single in it. But Hall actually involved 9 IQ evaluations between 60 and 80, and the ones that were below 70 were excluded, so that left 7 scores between 71 and 80 that were considered. Would you agree that that's what the facts of Hall were?
I would agree that those were the facts of Hall, Your Honor, which is why I think it's so important that the court deliberately limited its holding to a single IQ score. And I realize it didn't say a single, it said an IQ score. An is singular. So
how is that different than here? We have IQ scores between 72 and 78, I guess, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And the reason that it's different is that the court in Hall was deliberately limiting its holding to an IQ score, and the dissent noted that.
What you mean by that. Why I want you to try to help me understand.
Sure. So, Your Honor, I think that the logical implication of my friend's argument, particularly in terms of the Dr. Fabian rehabilitation, would be that a prisoner who scored 100 IQ tests of 74 would fall within a range of error, because the range of error, according to my friend, is basically plus or minus 5, no matter how many IQ scores you have. Now, that's not what the standard error of measurement is, and I would note that the APA's amicus brief in the Hall case itself does a good job of walking through what the standard error of measurement is. It is designed to replicate the margin.
But can we just get back to what I'm asking you? In Hall, the scores are between 71 and 80, and the court says You have to go back and you have to assess the whole thing. There can't be a rigid cutoff. You have to assess the whole thing, and more doubles down on that. Mm-hmm. Here we have scores between 72 and 78, so 1 point higher on the low end, but mm-hmm. 2 points lower on the high end. And we have 6 scores. We don't have five or 6 scores. We don't have 7 scores that we're counting. So what I'm having difficulty, and I want to make sure I understand your argument, how is this different than Hall?
The Hall, Your Honor, the court deliberately limited its holding to one IQ score.
How do you say that, though? I don't understand. Like, where does that come from? That's not in the facts. The facts are that there were 7 IQ scores. So
right.
What do you mean it limits it to one? It's
addressed multiple IQ scores on page 714. It said this is a complicated endeavor, and then it just moved on. The dissent noted that. The dissent and Moore noted that. Neither of the majorities confronted that. They acknowledged that this was addressing and limiting itself to one IQ score, which is why the quote.
What would be the purpose of sending it back if you have one at 71, if that couldn't possibly be enough to establish intellectual disability? You understand what I'm asking?
I think I do, Your Honor, and I think that the answer would come in the Hall briefing, where the Florida courts were explicitly arguing that even with one score of 71, they didn't need to account for the SEM. That is what was at issue in Hall. And the court said, no, you do have to account for the standard error of measure when you only have a single score.
But again, like, if the fact that you have an 80, just like the 78 here, precludes the possibility that you could have intellectual disability, then why would the Supreme Court send it back with a 71? You understand what I'm saying?
Well,
especially
I'm,
when there are 6 or 5 other scores between the 80 and the 71 that are over the 71. Like, wouldn't that be a waste of time?
No, Your Honor. And I'm glad that you mentioned the score of 80, because the majority in Hall explicitly referred to a score of 80 when it was addressing Arizona's statute and said that 80 would be well beyond a situation where you would have to evaluate the SEM.
Can I just read to you one part of this? It says, Florida held a hearing to consider Hall's motion. Hall again presented evidence of intellectual disability, including an IQ test score of 71. Hall had received 9 IQ evaluations in 40 years with scores ranging from 60 to 80, but the sentencing court excluded the 2 scores below 70 for evidentiary reasons, leaving only the scores between 71 and 80. I mean, that's part of the facts as they're written in Hall.
Right, Your Honor. And I think that that this would contribute to an overreading of Hall if what we're reading Hall to say is that any time a prisoner gets a 71 or a 70, despite every other score in the prisoner has received in his or her life, we're going to only look at that score.
I don't think that's what we're saying. What we're saying is the high end of the scores in Hall was higher than the high end of the scores here, and the low end of the scores with the SEM takes you into a possibility of intellectual disability. And so why aren't we bound by exactly what the Hall court and then later the Moore court said? I mean, how are the facts here? How do they take us out of that?
Right. Well, Your Honor, the Hall court was applying the SEM for one individual IQ score. And we know that it was doing that because that's what it said that it was doing. That's where that plus or minus 5 is coming from. When you had an SEM, I think on that score, it stipulated that it was going to be.
I guess I just don't read it the same way. I don't see where it says that we're only, I mean, first of all, I don't see that. Second of all, I don't see how it makes sense. What happened to the other scores? They didn't just disappear. They're part of the record, and there's no reason to send it back for a score of 71 if you're going to find that it's an impossibility that a score of 80 could ever mean that you're intellectually disabled. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think I do, Your Honor.
I want to understand your position because I want to make sure I'm giving it fair consideration, and I think I'm missing something here, which is why I'm trying to draw it out of you.
Yeah, Your Honor, again, the score, so a plus or minus 5, that's going to be 2 standard errors of measurement on either side of a score of 70. So that's where we get that range, 75 to 65. So what it was applying was necessarily the single score SEM. And it disclaimed any attempt to look at multiple scores SEM. It simply said that that's a complicated endeavor. So its holding is limited then to a situation where you have serious uncertainty as to
Let me see if I can ask the question a different way. If Judge Grenade had deliberately limited her analysis to 1 IQ score, would she have erred?
If she had deliberately limited her analysis to 1 IQ score, could have done that if she had found that all of the other scores were invalid, Your Honor.
That's not my question.
Right.
My question is, what if she'd done exactly what you said she should have done and deliberately limited her analysis to 1 IQ score? That's what you say she should have done to follow Hall, right?
No, Your Honor. She should not be deliberately limiting her analysis to 1 IQ score. That is not
I thought you said that's what the Supreme Court says you do.
Is not what the Supreme Court says you do, Your Honor. That is what the Supreme Court's analysis in Hall applied to. It deliberately limited its holding, and that was on display in the briefing because Florida was operating.
So what should Judge Grenade have done in order to avoid committing error?
Well, I think that the burden...
Which IQ scores? 1 IQ score or all the IQ scores?
Well, Your Honor, insofar as the experts all agreed, which I think they did in this case, that all of those scores were valid, the court should have analyzed all of those scores, and the burden fell on the petitioner to present a way of figuring out what the SEM for those multiple scores was going to be, and then developing a theory as to what the true IQ was. The way that he was trying to do that was with the Flynn effect. That was, he bet his entire case on the Flynn effect, and the district court rejected it. But the district court then moved on and said, I'm going to reject the primary theory that you present in this case, but I'm still going to try to find a way to get the score at 70 or below. And the only way that it could do that was by disregarding several valid scores cherry-picking the lowest and then ratcheting it downwards in deciding that that could plausibly be below 70.
I'm sorry. I should have asked Judge Jordan if he has any questions. Judge Jordan, you're still with us, right?
Yes, I've been here the whole time. Thank you.
All right. Any questions of... Nope. I see no more questions. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Court is...
Thank you.
Court is adjourned.